Now, in the beginning, I thought what we'd do, we'd read it just to get the background, and then follow three types of reasoning through the parable. It shouldn't take but maybe an hour. Sister Gail, if you could read 20 verses at least.
And Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal, went to Shechem unto his mother's brethren and communed with them and with all the family of the house of his mother's father, saying, Speak, I pray you, in the ears of all the men of Shechem, whether it's better for you either that all the sons of Jerubbaal, which are 70 persons, reign over you, or that one reign over you. Remember also that I am your bone and your flesh. And his mother's brethren spake with him in the ears of all the men of Shechem all these words, and their hearts inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, He is our brother. And they gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Baal-Berith, wherewith Abimelech hired vain and light persons, which followed him. And he went unto his father's house at Ophrah, and slew his brethren, the sons of Jerubbaal, being 70 persons upon one stone, notwithstanding yet Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself. And all the men of Shechem gathered together in all the house of Milo, and went, and made Abimelech king by the plain of the pillar that was in Shechem. And when they told it to Jotham, he went and stood in the top of Mount Gerizim, and lifted up his voice and cried, and said unto them, Hearken unto me, ye men of Shechem, that God may hearken unto you. The trees went forth on a time to anoint a king over them.
This is the parable.
And they said unto the olive tree, Reign thou over us. But the olive tree said unto them, Should I leave my fatness wherewith by me they honor God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees? And the trees said to the fig tree, Come thou and reign over us. But the fig tree said unto them, Should I forsake my sweetness and my good fruit, and go to be promoted over the trees? Then said the trees unto the vine, Come down, reign over us. And the vine said unto them, Should I leave my wine, which cheereth God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees? Then said all the trees unto the bramble, Come thou, and reign over us. And the bramble said unto the trees, If in truth ye anoint me king over you, then come and put your trust in my shadow. And if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. Now therefore, if ye have done truly and sincerely, and that ye have made Abimelech king, and if ye have dealt well with Jerubbaal and his house, and have done unto him according to the deserving of his hands, for my father fought for you, and adventured his life far, and delivered you out of the hand of Midian. And he arisen up against my father's house this day, and has slain his sons, 70 persons, upon one stone, and has made Abimelech the son of his maidservant, king over the men of Shechem, because he is your brother. If ye then have dealt truly and sincerely with Jerubbaal, and with his house this day, then rejoice ye in Abimelech, and let him also rejoice in you. But if not, let fire come out from Abimelech, and devour the men of Shechem, and the house of Milo, and let fire come out from the men of Shechem, and from the house of Milo, and devour Abimelech.
All right. And Jotham ran and fled away. We may not read the rest of it. I think this is too long a reading, and too much is lost, but now we've got the introduction to this parable. Now we have to review a bit, because there's so much there, so fast, we can't comprehend it all. First, Zerubbabel, who is that? Another name for Gideon. This is Gideon. Gideon's children. He had 70 children. 70 sons.
And this one that wasn't killed.
And this one was a son by another maid servant, where the other were from various wives. The 70 sons he had from different wives, but the maidservant, a concubine, he had Abimelech as a son.
What about Jotham?
Jotham was one of the sons.
He was one of the 70?
He was one of the 70.
But they killed the 70.
Yes, but you see, this is an interesting point too, now that you bring it up. We might as well cover it. You notice that he had only 70 sons, and Jotham is one of the 70, mm-hmm. but it doesn't say he slew 69. And then, well, one escaped. Because, see, to all intents and purposes, Abimelech wanted to wipe out all those children by the wives, and then would leave him as the only heir apparent. And so, to all intents and purposes, even though Jotham escaped, it says 70. Yeah. And the count says 70, and also in the parable he says 70. Where actually that's all there were, and there were 69 slain, not 70. And this reminds you of other things too, about the 3 days, and parts of 3 days. In Hebrew, there's a certain liberty they take, nuances that are understandable and known to the people from their customs, but to us, we're a little too, sometimes a little bit too mathematical. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it isn't. Now, when Gideon died, I'll use his name instead of Zerubbabel. When he died, immediately there was a vacuum in the nation. And all the people then wanted to go back to their own gods, Baal Berith. They wanted to become sons of Baal instead of God. And here we find that Jotham was the only one that escaped. Incidentally, when he slew them in the account, do you recall how it happened? He went first. He was very clever, Abimelech, because he knew he couldn't engineer this all alone. So he went to his mother's hometown. Where was that?
Shechem.
That's right, Shechem or Shechem. Or Shechem. There's several ways you can pronounce the word, and they're all correct, depending on the vowels, as long as you're consistent all the way through. He went on the mother's side to her father and consulted with them, the family there in the town, and suggested, do you want 70 people to reign over you or one? Me. And I'm your flesh and blood. Very nicely dropped the hint. Pretty broad one. Now, next thing, they talked it over amongst themselves. Notice in the account. And they thought that this made sense to them. And it began to work on them, and they thought this was a good idea, so they went along with it. But what did they do? I don't know if we've read this yet. What they did, instead of going and slaying them themselves, they delivered to Abimelech money. Notice how much money did they give him. Yeah, see if you can find the verse. Yes, of... what? Of silver. Now why did they give Abimelech 70 pieces of silver?
Piece for each of the sons.
Alright, 70 sons. Mm-hmm. 70 pieces. Now what was he to do with those pieces of silver, Abimelech?
Kill them.
Yes, but then what did he do in the account? Well, we see we should have read it from that standpoint. He went to the house of Baal-Berith, and he hired certain vain persons. Did we read this verse?
Yes.
He went and he got certain vain persons to follow him, presumably 70. He gave them, you want to earn some money. You see what you do if you want to get somebody to commit a murder, you go into the neighborhood where they're the cutthroats and thieves, and say, I'll give one piece of silver, which is a lot of money, to every individual, and they would be assassins. He used that money to pay assassins, vain, empty people who were only interested in money, not realizing that they were going to kill the children of the great Judge Gideon, who was a blessing to the nation. And so they followed him, and they did it. And then when they slew these children, notice what they did? They did it on what?
Stone.
On one stone. That's just like a butcher, isn't it? Imagine if you could see this enacted, how terrible this would. You talk about the guillotine, where you have the one machine going up and down, you have the same thing here. You have the block. And then they just kill them, slew them on this rock, one after another, like a sacrifice, 70 sons. But what happened, of the 70, Jotham managed to escape. And he hid. Now, what does Jotham do? They, of course, when Abimelech went back to his hometown, they made him king. And he reigned how long?
3 years.
You count, he reigned 3 years. Now, Jotham chose a certain occasion to do his work. And what did he do, Jotham? He went to the top of a mountain called Gerizim. In fact, we were there. There's two mountains in this area. And Shechem is right down the bottom of the hill, or Shechem?
Exactly.
Ah, That's right. The Mount of Blessing and the Mount of Curses. The Mount of Blessing was this Mount Gerizim, and Mount Ebal was the Mount of Cursing. And this is in the Old Testament, in the book of Deuteronomy somewhere. If you look in the book of Deuteronomy, look that up. One's the Hill of Blessing and one's the Hill of Curses. And the reason for this is that these two mountains are near each other, and there's a valley or depression in between, and it forms like an amphitheater. And the land is sort of terraced. It goes in ridges down. So it's convenient to sit in it like a stadium almost. And so what they had the priest or the Levites read portions of the law. Leviticus, the 26th chapter, where Moses said that if you do good and obey God, you will multiply your crops, your children will grow, you'll get rich, your enemies will be afraid of you. And all these blessings were read aloud from the Mount Gerizim, which is the Mount of Blessing. And then on the other hill, if you don't do this, then this will happen to you. You'll be barren and sterile, and the ground will be in thorns, and one of the enemy will chase 10,000 of you. One of the enemy will scare 10,000 of you, and things like that. And so they had this rehearsed, and it would be very dramatic and very impressive, but it would be an aid to them to remember, because when they go home, they could remember this better than if you try to read it like tonight, just perfunctorily, or even if you read it seriously. It's still, when you're seeing and hearing, as well as reasoning on this, it makes a little deeper impression. And so there he goes, and he reads down to the bottom of the hill, where the town is. We went from that town up a winding road up this mountain, and it's a steep mountain, and he read over the side of the mountain. And he called down with a loud voice, because he couldn't do it too faintly, and they had to hear him down below. So he probably chose an occasion where they were all gathered together with some other festivity. And while they're congregated there, he calls down to them, hear now this, you know, you did so-and-so to my father who was a blessing, and he risked his neck or life on your behalf, and in your appreciation, what do? You murder all his children. Now he says you've made this one, who was the child of a maid servant, you've made him king over you. Now, listen to this. You have a decision to make. And if you feel you've done the right thing and you haven't done harm by my father, well, then you rejoice, both the king and you, and be happy and have mirth. But you feel that you're guilty. He says, then let destruction come on you, a fire come on you, and so forth. Then he issues then this parable, that the trees of the field were to anoint a king. Now, that's verse 8. The trees went forth on a time to anoint a king over them, and they said unto the olive tree, reign thou over us. Now, what would be the trees of the field? The inhabitants of the land. The inhabitants of the land, the people. And particularly this area, and more particularly the men of Shechem, and also the house of Millo, that's mentioned also in the account. That's another family that's involved. And they invite the olive tree to be king over them. And then what does the olive tree say? Should I leave my what?
Fatness.
Fatness. And what's the fatness suggest? That in doing this fatness, that what would be happening?
Wealth, material.
Well, there's a spiritual application here, and also another figurative lesson. But in the natural, an olive tree is known for?
Oil.
The oil, olive oil. And that fatness is in the oil, because the oil is a fat. And this produces what? Should I leave my fatness? That is, should I leave the producing of the olive oil, which is a blessing to man, wherewith by me they honor God and man? How do they honor God and man?
Well, it gives life, one thing, which is...
All right. It's a blessing to the people in that it was used in vessels for light, and olive oil is also used as a food. You can eat the olives as a food, and also as a medicine, and also it's used to anoint, like the holy anointing oil, the anoint the king, the priest, or so forth. And there's an honoring of God in connection with that. It has a higher spiritual meaning when used in a religious ceremony. And then it even is very practical to common man. They get a blessing. Both get a blessing. It has a beautiful lesson, practical benefit. And now the olive tree says, should I leave this and go and to be promoted? And the olive tree didn't want to do this because of certain reasons, which we'll go into maybe a little later. Now they invited next to
Fig tree.
And the fig tree is noted for figs, that's right. And the sweetness or the flavor of the fig is so delicious too. It's a food. My sweetness and my good fruit and go to be promoted over the trees. Now notice both are reluctant. The olive tree didn't want to be involved, and neither did the fig tree. And then there was one other. Now in this picture, the vine is doing properly. Notice this isn't the vine of the earth in this particular instance. And the vine makes what?
Wine,
which also produces
grapes,
and then when it ferments, wine, which makes people happy, say at weddings and certain ceremonies, or just as a entree to a meal. And when taken with the moderation, and you couldn't take water in many of the lands back there, either because of scarcity or because of disease. So the wine was taken as a liquid with great moderation. But it was necessary to have it in quite a supply to last through the year. There's one thing common to all three, right? There was what? The what? Olive tree, fig tree, and the vine.
They all had a fruit.
All right, they all had a fruit. And all produced more or less gladness. All right, that's right. All produce gladness in their own way. They all performed a function that was a blessing to others in what they did. And they didn't want to do it. Should I leave my wine, which honored God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees? Then the trees all said unto the bramble, come thou and reign over us. The bramble is only good for one thing. For burning, it burns with a crackle, but it doesn't produce any happiness. Well, what does a bramble produce? Thorns?
Shadow.
What?
It says shadow.
Shadow, yes. But that shadow is the one that kills. You know, there are different kinds. There's a shadow or a shade that's delightful in a tree, where you get out of the sun and you get the nice breeze and it's the shade and it's very comfortable. But a bramble just grows profusely, just like weeds in the field, and kill other things. It just kills and chokes, and it's a shadow of death rather than a shade of refreshment with leaves. But they had thorns. And now when we contrast the bramble with the other three, what was the difference between the bramble and the other three? The bramble was destructive, not happiness, the opposite, friction. Friction, trouble, death, distress, just the opposite. But now the bramble, what did he say? Did he say, should I leave my... Well, he wanted to be understood. Before he was to be king, he was glad to be king, all right, but he wanted to be understood in no uncertain terms that if he were to be king, they would have do what?
Put their trust.
They would have put their trust in his shadow. And there's another way of saying that, that they were to give almost like blind obedience, complete, utter submission to him and his whatever he might the dictates be. But you notice here, but he says, if not, then let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. Now notice, before he says he wanted to be understood that if he were to be king, he was to have this obedience. But if they didn't make him king, and he wanted, that was a hint in the strongest term, a humility that you couldn't resist. Because you got punished if you didn't fall in line to make him king. And notice that this bramble, what does it do? To devour the cedars of Lebanon. These great big tall trees. And this lowly bramble had the nerve. What would be another characteristic of this bramble? Not only the thorns and all.
Proud
and like bombastic. Very loud in its claims, what it will do, and so forth. And then he told what the meaning of this parable was. As far as Abimelech was, Jotham, in issuing the parable, said that there's a lesson in this, and this lesson has to do with you down there that I'm speaking to from the mountain. And who was the leading character in the parable? In the parable, what's the most noteworthy thing that stands out? Not that it's favorable.
The
bramble. That stands out because it's contrast. Where the other three are sweetness and light and gladness, the bramble stands out as an oddity and just a misfit. And that bramble then represents, in this first primary application,
Abimelech.
Abimelech is this bramble. Now then, what about the, like, the olive tree and the fig tree and the vine? Who would that represent that were asked to be king? Doesn't say. I mean, you wouldn't know right after, but there might be a guess involved.
For those sons?
Yes, some of the sons. Perhaps some of the more prominent ones who might have potential leadership qualities when their father died. Probably some of the people went to them privately and asked one or two or three of them if they wouldn't mind ruling in the father's stead. But they were so noble, and they were humble, and they were not desirous of leaving what they were doing to be advanced this way. And then what happened, the trees ultimately gave submission. They asked the bramble to be king. Now in this case, it's the trees in a particular area. And what area is that?
The area of Milo?
Yeah, all right. Up near Samaria, in the region of Samaria, where the town or village of Shechem was very prominent, like a capital city. In fact, that's Nablus today in Israel. Now, when he uttered this parable, that was a pretty long parable, and he had to really stand out and punctuate this when he would be shouting this down, and then he ran before they could get up there to get him. And another thing, see, too, when you're on top of a hill and the people come up to apprehend you, see, if they're coming up the hill, you can see them, how they're coming up. And you can see what area is left exposed, and you can go down like a bolt of lightning because you're going downhill in the area that you see is like there's a vacancy. And they can't tell what you're planning to do. And while they're climbing up, they're pressed against the mountain, and they're limited in their vision, where the one up above has the whole landscape before him. And he sees this area where to go, and he goes right downhill, and he gets out of their midst to safety. And the parable ends, as far as Jotham is concerned, in this incident. But the fulfillment of it, as regards Abimelech, was, he said that in this parable, what was going to be destroyed? He prophesied, Jotham, in the parable, that two things were to be destroyed.
The men of Shechem and Abimelech.
That's right. It was going to be a fire that would boomerang on both parties. And it would be fire, like, as it were, trouble that would be involved, related to it, which we'll see. Now, what happened, we won't go into the historical account, which you can read in the latter half of the ninth chapter. But the sum and substance was that eventually there came another person into the picture, another personality from the outside, and he wondered why even Abimelech should be king. They should go back further. Instead of going to just the mother's father's house, they should go to the father of the father, go back another generation, which would involve his family, and be a backing along his line. And so there was a counter-revolution involved there. And Abimelech got wind of what was going on. And there were people on both sides of the issue. In any event, Abimelech destroyed his opponents, those who would threaten his leadership. He destroyed them like fire. And actually, that's what he used.
Fire.
Yeah, fire, because when he destroyed the ones in the tower there, he says he took a branch from a tree and says, "Everyone in my army, whatever you see me do, you do." So he hacks down a big branch, they hack down branches, and then he runs up and lays the branch against the tower eventually, and then they set it on fire with the intent of burning the place down. That's one instance. But that was the second one, I think, where he was killed himself. And what happened in besieging this place, where they're laying fire, a woman upstairs threw a stone out and killed him, hit him. And he knew he was going to die. And so rather than to be said that Abimelech died by the stone of a common woman, he wanted to be rather the soldier to it. So he said to the young man, who was his bearer, "You put the sword in me. Finish me off, because I don't want it to be known that a woman killed me." And what happened? The man did it. And this reminds you something, too. Remember Saul? See, he asked his armor bearer, I think it was in his case, to put the sword through him. And this is not unusual in certain cases, rather than to have the humiliation attached to their name or the family's name. So eventually what happened, both parties were involved, which fulfilled the parable. But this parable is so startling that there are other lessons involved. We've just taken the one that applied in Jotham and Abimelech's day. In this request, where the trees of the field wanted to have a leader, this reminds you of something, just as with Saul, remember? I'm taking one abstract. They wanted a leader, only in his case he was humble to start with, and it was later on in life that he changed. But they saw that they wanted a leader, a king over them, and they eventually got it, and it was Saul. And he's the one, incidentally, that had this experience at the end too, which is interesting. But in the spiritual sense, this was true too. Because Gideon is a picture of what in many?
Jesus.
Remember where that says, the sword of the Lord and Gideon. Well, the sword of Jehovah and Gideon was a picture of Jesus, and the 300 who slew the enemy of the land represented the church. Three classes of 100. Three perfect classes. Justified classes from three different sources, which it doesn't elaborate on. But Gideon represented Jesus. Now you have a picture in the church, in the gospel age, Jesus, when he died, the great judge, he left the church without a leader. Now they were not satisfied to just have it distributed out. Remember, Abimelech said, do you want 70 people? You want 70 rulers over you? And they were afraid that that would be done, because during the period of the judges, actually they did have 70 judges at one time, riding on white asses. Remember that account? That judge of both North and South Israel? And in the Old Testament, you had the 70 elders who were to judge Israel, and only the case that would be too hard would be brought to Moses, and the case that would be too hard would be brought to his successor during the period of the judges. So if things were left alone, they might have reasoned, this would be a democratic process, and that from the different areas would be from the tribe, for of their own selves, they'd each have a leader, and that would be a pretty good reasoning if things were just left alone, and they would appoint in their own area, their own locale, their leader, and the other one, and theirs, and then the whole nation be judged by this. But no, Abimelech whispered, there should be only the one king. See, this pride, and this reminds you of what? The doctrine of the papacy, the Nicolaitan spirit, Lord of the people. Nico, Lord. Laitan, people. Or Laol, or Laos, the different form derivatives, but mean people. And here we find, now the word Abimelech, that sounds familiar. Remember Abimelech, Molech, king? King? The word Molech means king. Not only the god of fire, but the word itself means king. Molech, Melech. And Ab, or Abu, means father. Father king. And this is the papacy. Call no man father. Papa, father of fathers. The father king. See, what happened when Jesus died and the apostles were his representative. And then the apostles fell asleep. And then what happens for a little time, the various churches like Antioch, Alexandria, Rome, Ephesus, these cities each had a bishop. And instead of one being the bishop or head of the whole church, these various ones governed more or less, or were like chairmen in their own locale, and they were called the patriarchs. Patriarch of such of Constantinople, the patriarch of this town, of that town. But after a while, the doctrine of papacy was, why should we have a divided church like that? We should have one leader. And eventually the Roman Pope won out. And he was called the father of fathers, because the others were patriarchs, fathers. But he was the chief father, the father over them. So he was the one over them as far as the others, and eventually we have the doctrine of papacy developed, which is France. So back of this parable, there's a lot packed into the lesson there that doesn't meet the eye. You might think it only applied back there, but there's a supernatural wisdom. So when Jotham went up on that hill and noted this parable, he probably had to, he was a very clever man in making this analogy, but we think the Lord helped him a lot. Because back of this are to be other lessons. And that was the development of papacy and its ultimate destruction by fire. And there's other pictures too. Now we'll go to another one. Now let's take this parable from another standpoint. Notice that in the church there are various ones that have capabilities in certain areas. Here we have the olive tree, the fig tree, the vine, and the bramble. It's true that in life's experience, when you see various ones serving the Lord and the Lord's word ministry, that certain ones have very recognizability along certain lines. One in one field, one in another area, and if they stuck to the line of enterprise or work activity that they were most suited for and were a blessing to others, not aggrandizing power to themselves or honor, but being a blessing to others, like being fruit and making joy to, why, the natural thing was that's where they should be. Now, normally, when a leader comes along who is to direct others with all these characteristics, he has to be pretty outstanding. In fact, normally, he has to have quite a few talents. Not the one talent in this area or the talent in that area, but it's usually a person with more talents than a single, 5 talents or 10 talented person. And this makes him in a better position to understand the problems and what needs to be done and what needs not to be done and how to properly do things. If you get an evangelist to be the head of a Christian movement, that's all they're going to do is evangelize, and they're not going to grow in the truth very much except the very simple fundamentals. And that's all they do. They're out to convert, to convert, to convert. Now, that's all right when they stay in their area, but when they get to assume that they are the representative of the Lord's people, then the problems come in. Because they'd be looking at everything from an evangelistic standpoint, and they're not interested in advancing of truth and dispensational truths and all that. Their whole objectivity is to win other souls for Christ, which is commendable. But there's more than that. The scriptures say you're to work out your own salvation, and that it's an external work, it's an internal work. There's a lot of things to be done, not one specialty. And therefore, a proper leader should have capabilities to some extent in other areas so that he can be a leader and have some understanding. And not, as so often is the case, they have just organizational ability. And they're very unkind, abrupt, and destructive about other people. They could listen to Jesus Christ himself and find fault with what he had to say, because they're not of that nature. They're only thinking from their own particular standpoint in a leadership role. They cannot understand, and they don't have the liberality and the generosity of spirit that a leader should have. So here in this parable, what is it? The bramble takes over. And this bramble has nothing but unkindness for others. To obey him, just do and whatever he says, and it's always thorns and so forth, and it's to be a shadow and to be a servant to the individual. Rather than the individual suggest to the other individual how he might serve the Lord along the lines of his ability. You see, normally an organizational man, what he'll do, he'll not have you serve according to you, but he'll try to make you fit into where he wants you to do it in his own way, to conform to a pattern. And thus that be the Lord's work. Now let's take an iron. Some feel that the coal torch work should be the only thing. Some think tracting. Some think sermons. or some like leaflets where the dead, or giving public talks or radio talks. There's different ideas of how what's been. Others feel that that shouldn't be done at all, that we should have more of our study meetings for the deep truths, and thus they don't have any meetings for the newcomers, only for the advanced, or they have for the newcomers and none for the advanced. And so there's this variety that's needed. We need the olive tree, the fig tree, and the vine, all, as well as if there is to be a leader, like the seven servants to the church. See, the Lord did design that there would be the seven. So that's within his arrangement. That wouldn't be wrong. See, but now it would be wrong to look for a universal leader because he had only seven. So I like the parable from that standpoint too. I find it very, personally, very practical. You have several lessons all involved in this one parable. And you could make it four by following it through the natural house of Israel, taking the parable in the local setting and then giving it, like I did with Saul, the national setting, and follow the experience of the nation, fleshly Israel. So you'd have back in Jotham's day, and then the nation, and then the spiritual nation, and then just general lessons of activities in the Lord's service. So actually you have four talks there, all compounded in that one parable. I guess that's it.
I think this is the first time I'm reading this.
Me too. That was magical last week.
I never understood these things. I read them, but I didn't understand.
There are three talks. I think I've only given two of them in a little more depth, where I took just the one area. But let's then close this particular service with one verse of a hymn.